And welcome to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks running a skinny post means chasing the mailman before breakfast. That's Lenny. That's not me. Mike, why do you think dogs hate mailmen so much and male women? Lenny's equal opportunity in his hatred.
Equal opportunity in his hatred for a given profession. I don't know, because it's not like a bull seeing red. Like, I don't think there's anything triggering around a mailman's uniform cover, right? Like, it all seems like pretty neutral.
It's like a pleasant blue, usually. And other people come up to the house and deliver packages. Well, not deliver packages, but, you know, park or drive by. There's something about the mail person. It's like a genetic code.
I will say, the first time I did meet Lenny, he was also very protective. So I think that might just be like, you know, the way he fends off strangers. Obviously, you matter a lot to him. And so I appreciate the fact that he's willing to protect and also attack.
Or you just look like a mailman.
Ooh.
It is August. It's finally August. Division previews are over. Real football, sort of real football, is happening. We both watched the Hall of Fame game. I know this because we both wrote tweets about it that did not get a ton of engagement. I'm not going to lie. But I was actually excited for the game, Mike. Not so much from the Falcons end, although we did get a really sad kind of looking Matt Schaub at the end there. But on the Broncos side, I wanted to see Drew Lock in action. We saw Drew Lock, not a lot of action, but he was there. Holding the football, releasing it from his hand.
He was in pads. He had a helmet and everything. Yeah.
Real human being. I think Vic Fangio put it best when he said, not exactly what he had hoped for, right? Which, if your own coach is shading you after a week zero preseason performance, not the best outing.
Yeah, a little uncomfortable quote there, almost as uncomfortable as the fact that Vic Fangio completely stole the show with his passage of kidney stones before a preseason game, cementing himself in the early runnings as one of the greatest football guys of the year already.
And the DPI call, who could forget? I'm just so glad I was there to witness that. You know, I thought about going out to dinner, thought about seeing other people and being with friends, but instead I stayed at home with my real friend, which is preseason football. Listen, the division previews are wrapped up, which is amazing. For those who listen to the previews, they know we didn't actually do picks, right? I had a lot of integrity. I just talked about the teams. I wasn't gunning for any sort of record or trying to be right. Well, that changes today, Mike, because I came up with a system last night. It took me a few minutes, and I'm sure the math is really stupid, but my system is such that we are going to talk about every single team today. I should have come up with a cute name for it. It's sort of like we're going to draft teams to win the Super Bowl, okay? But here's my system. So we're going to alternate taking teams.
Yep.
So basically it's just we're going to try to, you know, it's not just about which teams are good, but which teams we think will get far, because you get points. You get a point, you know, obviously for every win, so your record. So a 13-win team gets you 13 points. We add that up at the end of the season. And then if you make it to the postseason, you get 5 points. If you make it to the division round, you get 10 points. If you make it to a conference championship, you get 15 points. If you make it to the Super Bowl, you get 25 additional points. This is probably a really stupid system. I apologize to, because I'm sure that's too many points or whatever. I don't care. And if you win the Super Bowl, you get a 10-point bonus.
See, Mina, here's the thing is, you have a lot of really smart people that come on this podcast, and I think relative to the rest of that group, I am pretty close to the dumbest. And so you have to understand, for the most people listening, I am the meat of the bell curve, and that system sounded fine to me. I was excited about the number of points I could earn, so I think you've accomplished your goal.
I don't know what that makes me. Far from the meat, the bone of the bell curve, the gristle of the curve.
Very fitting for a dog-friendly podcast, by the way.
Yeah, Lenny eats it all. We'll put it that way. I think that the point of this exercise is not to win, because we are millennials. We're just trying to participate here. But really just to kind of talk about who we think's good and who we think, you know, has a chance of going pretty far this year. And postseason and record and everything, all that does matter here. So I have looked at, you know, schedules and tried to get a sense of who might regress, who might perform better. It's not just, you know, in a vacuum, who is the best team. So we're going to do this draft. I am giving you the first pick, Mike, as my guest. But before we get to that first pick, quickly want to tell you guys about ZipRecruiter. And you're like, ZipRecruiter? Haven't heard? Yes, you have if you listen to this podcast. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get a ton. Well, you get a ton, but also get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate to the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And with the first pick of the Mina Kime Show featuring Lenny Super Bowl draft, Mike Golic Jr. takes
the Kansas City Chiefs.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What?
One off the board, baby.
Wow. Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's weird. Okay.
Weird?
Starting off with a bang.
Weird. I take the team that had the MVP of the league last year and barely lost in overtime in the AFC Championship game, and that's weird?
Okay. Make your, I mean, it's weird because I thought you were going to take the Patriots. So make your case for the Chiefs.
Also,
Dan, I hope you're actually keeping track of what we take.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's all over this right now. Super producer Dan Stanzik. I mean, listen, my case is this. This is a team who achieved everything they did last year, obviously on the backs of historic offensive performance from Patrick Mahomes, one of 3 quarterbacks to throw 50 touchdowns in a season in the history of the league with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Obviously, we all expect some regression with that. The difference is you can't get much less productive on defense than they were last year. I mean, outside of Chris Jones and Dee Ford occasionally flashing in the pass rush aspect, on the back end and run stopping, they were abysmal. And so you go out this year and yes, you get rid of, you lose Dee Ford, but you add Frank Clark. You get Tyrann Mathieu on the back end. Offensively, they're bringing back a large contingent of what they had minus Kareem Hunt in the backfield. I just feel like even with some offensive regression, this team is going to go up and get some improvement on defense, allow for some balance, and Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid are still there, and so I'm still confident in this group.
So the Chiefs were my 3rd pick, so I may have overreacted a little bit to your...
The judgment!
You know, I'm trying to bring some heat at the top of the show. I really thought you were going to take the Patriots, so I'm stoked because I'm going to take the Patriots. Spoiler alert. But, and part of the reason I liked the Patriots so much better than the Chiefs, Mike, is that the Patriots have the easiest schedule in the NFL, and the Chiefs have the 8th hardest, and I'm using Football Outsiders 2019 strength of schedule. So that makes me a little nervous. No concerns, really, about this offense. You know, as people who may have listened to our AFC West preview with Field Yates, I think that was my 2nd one, so that was a ways back. Most of my concern about Kansas City was I just didn't feel like they had done enough on defense, had added enough. You make a great point, which is it's hard to be worse. And obviously they did trade for Clark. It was kind of a talent bet over Dee Ford ultimately. And I do think Frank Clark is better than Dee Ford. Still really do not love that linebacker group. Do not love secondary in general, even with the addition of Mathieu. They are switching things up a little bit, having added Spags as their defensive coordinator, who, you know, his style is very, very different. It's very aggressive. It's all about getting to the quarterback, doing whatever it takes, a lot of blitzing. And I just am not sure that secondary can handle that. But, and I don't think that the run defense should be significantly better. Basically, you know, it is... I envision them being a pretty similar team to last year, Mike. And you're right. Last year's team could have made it to the Super Bowl. So it's totally reasonable as a first pick. I just like the Pats better, mostly because of the schedule.
No, I get it. Listen, the Pats are the 2nd team I had on my board here. So totally understand it. Obviously, the Pats are a lot of interesting to me, right? So I guess we can safely say with the 2nd pick in the draft, you are taking officially
the New England Patriots. Yeah, let's talk about the Pats. The Pats who, made a shocking decision and stuck with their quarterback, their old quarterback, Tom Brady. How do you feel about that? by the way. So I guess a little bit of NFL news we can talk about.
Yeah, you know what? It makes sense. It's basically a series of one-year deals now for Tom Brady. He even acknowledged that this is not, you know, the multi-year deal the way it looks like. It's a series, right. You know, it's a one-year deal with a void, you know, voids after that. So it makes sense, but it's interesting to me because this is the first time that the Patriots as an organization are really acknowledging Tom Brady's mortality. Like, we're playing this year to year now.
Yeah, it's definitely year to year. It's so weird, right? Tom Brady's contract. Cause I do feel that the benefits of it are a tad overstated. They certainly matter. So, you know, he makes in what, 23 this year or something.
Yep.
And they can void it after this year.
$15 million this year.
Well, that's offensive, but, you know, it's about a 10 mil difference, right? Between what he'd probably get more on the open market, but what like a top of the court line quarterback gets paid now in the NFL, and that is money, obviously, that they get to play with an additional $10 to $15 million in cap space every year as a result. But, you know, when you look at the Patriots roster, yes, that money gets spread around, and they benefit a lot from these players on the margins, right? It's not a stars and scrubs roster by any means. And then obviously they always make a lot of really smart trades, get guys like Michael Bennett, add veterans who are willing to take a little bit less. That's very Patriots-y. The contract's kind of weird to me, Mike, it's not weird because it's Brady and everything about him is not normal in the NFL, but it feels like, to me, both sides sort of gave up a little bit of leverage to get to a situation where they can both easily walk away when they want it to end, right? Because the Patriots cannot franchise Brady. They won't trade him, which is obviously, so he doesn't want them to have those options. Meanwhile, for them, there's no guarantees. So it is kind of this like mutually assured, like we're both going to assume there's enough trust here that we can get out of it when we both want to.
It makes sense considering everything that we experience with Brady this year is going to be a first. With a quarterback of his age and the success of the team at the same time, we are in completely uncharted territory. And so the relationship between these two sides is just truly different. I don't think there's any way else, any other comp, any other way that we could look at this that would be appropriate to actually compare. So you're right. It's just this mutual assurance that we've been doing this long enough together where, yeah, we're not probably both in the situation we exactly love, but it's one we both can agree on.
From a football perspective, just to kind of get back to them versus the Chiefs for the top pick, like I said, the schedule is really what does it for me. As I mentioned when I did the division preview, I'll stop saying that sentence, I promise, this is the last time. Well, I can't promise that, but I'll try to say it less. As I mentioned, I do that too much on shows. As I mentioned, like assuming, which you should never, that's like radio, TV 101, never assume people have been actually listening. But I love this secondary. I love this linebacker group. Dante Hightower, quietly one of the most important Patriots in franchise history, but that's neither here nor there. Pass rush, we'll see. In the playoffs, they went from sort of having a non-existent pass rush to having the best pass rush in the postseason. A lot of that was from play calling and defensive creativity. By the way, Kyle Van Noy, who was a playoff pass rush hero, is a guy they might use some of the cap space freed up by this new Brady contract to pay. You know, the biggest question for me is obviously the skill players, right? Yep. And who knows? Maybe that is too much of a leap to assume that, you know, a very lackluster receiving group, both at wide receiver and tight end, can step up. But I'm going to go ahead and make that assumption because it's New England. Okay, yeah. Third pick. Who do you got?
With the third pick, I am selecting the Los Angeles Rams.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Thank you for taking that so I don't have to struggle with the homerism.
Yeah, no, listen, this is twofold. You were kind enough to give me the first pick. This is your podcast. You're getting ready to call Rams preseason games. I don't want to put you in a moral quandary, and so the Rams go here, but they're also a pretty easy pick in this one. Like, this is a team, obviously, that showed a ton of promise last year. Again, a lot of the same things we can say about them, especially defensively, you can say that we did about the Chiefs, but the difference is the Rams, A, we know, brought over sort of the free agency roster of the all-time last year, especially with some guys in the back end, but you have the defensive player of the year and a guy who so grossly outpaces anyone else at his position in Aaron Donald on that side that I'm willing to put my faith in him defensively to make enough plays to give it back to an offense that's going to return Cooper Kupp, and we know what a difference he made in that offense. I know for you, you're very excited about Darrell Henderson, their backup running back, who's going to be helping out with what's now an interesting running back situation officially with Todd Gurley and that degenerative knee. Their offensive line shuffled some pieces, got a little bit younger, drafted Bobby Evans out of Oklahoma, drafted David Edwards later on to help replace Roger Saffold and John Sullivan in the middle of an O-line that had gotten old in a hurry. So all across the board, I mean, I don't see any reason for this offense to keep being less creative or less productive given the fact that they return most of their important pieces.
So here's the case for and against the Rams. I'll give you that because I have obviously been spending a lot of time thinking about this football
team. Yeah, I don't know if there's anyone on earth right now that knows more about the Rams than you, Mina, straight up.
Oh, there's many, many, many people. By the way, one of the more interesting things about preparing to do this preseason game I'm calling is, and everyone who's a fan of a team know this, and I've said this often, if you're a hardcore fan of a team, you know more than any national person. And it's interesting, right, when you start really diving into a team and listening to people who are very smart, who talk about it and cover it, and realizing you don't know anything about the team. But I am trying to get caught up. So my thoughts on the Rams, I also have them obviously ranked very high, are that the concerns, if you have concerns, would be, you mentioned the offensive line has turnover. They're starting two new starters, they're not new players, they're 2018 draft picks at left guard and center. The center transition in particular concerns me, which, you know, while Sullivan, you saw, if you watched the Rams last year, they did suffer a lot more interior pressure at the end of the second half of the season. It really hurt Goff. So in some ways you think, okay, maybe this is good to move on and get younger. But, you know, Mike, the relationship between quarterback and center is so important. And while Sullivan may not have been the player he once was, he still had the brain, right? So that's going to be a big transition going to Brian Allen there at center. And then the other concern, I suppose, if I was to ID something, is they added a couple of starters in Eric Weddle and Clay Matthews, who are all-time NFL players. They're also old. Aqib Talib, older. So we don't necessarily know. You know, at some point, aging hits those guys. On the plus side, I think reasons to think, and by the way, I'm setting aside all the very obvious things that you should like about this team, but the things I think that are changing that are, or reasons to, I think, be excited. I do think they're going to get a better outside pass rush this year, which has always been a hole. Not always, but they've never really placed Quinn. It's been Donald and whoever's benefited from Aaron Donald being double teamed, but hasn't really exploited that. I think Dante Fowler is going to step up in a big way based on what I've seen from camp. I think addition of Matthews helps at all. And finally, I realize we're spending way too much time on the Rams, so I'll just wrap it up here. I don't think Sean McVay is going to roll out the same offense this year.
Really?
Okay. I think we're going to see changes. I think we're going to see more personnel groupings. I think we're going to see creativity. I don't buy the whole, oh, the Patriots have the blueprint on stopping the Rams, because that's literally no one's the Patriots. But I do think he's going to counter that a bit. Okay. I talked way too much about the Rams, so I'm going to give my pick. We're at number 4, and I'm going to go with my Super Bowl winner, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ooh.
How do you feel about the Eagles?
I actually feel really good. And so this is twofold. Obviously, you've mentioned strength of schedule, which they have one of the weaker schedules that they're facing overall. But also, and you mentioned our friends at Football Outsiders, one of, I think, the more interesting stats from them that we see year to year is the adjusted games lost, dealing with injury, dealing with the amount of guys. And the Eagles were dead last in adjusted games lost last year, 118.5 games lost amongst the guys that they dealt with, and that waits for starters versus key backups, you know, different positions, all these different things. And you couple that with a lot of the offseason moves they made, that's a really good team, Mina.
I mean, so I love both lines, the depth, which, you know, is similar to the depth in some ways that they had on their Super Bowl run in the trenches. But this wide receiver group, like, is just so fun. It's so fun. Jeffrey, they added Jackson. You and I both love J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I'm in a dynasty league this year for the first time ever with Danny Kelly. And man, I really wanted him. I just missed out on him, and I was very upset with myself about that. But yeah, for the reasons you describe, which are the schedule, the injuries, really, last week we were asked about their weakness, and I could really only identify the secondary. But Mike, I don't think it's a glaring weakness. I think it's just a question mark, right? Because they've got guys coming back. I love the Eagles. I'm super high on them this year. So who do you got at five?
All right. At number five, Team Golic Jr. selects. This is actually me changing up on the fly because I have another team rated higher, but I'm going to reach, and you know why. The Indianapolis Colts.
No!
Yes!
Okay, make the case. I got them winning the division, so.
I guess that's the thing, is now that we're starting to get into this range, I was looking at who's going to be winning their division and putting themselves in the best range, because as we get later into this,
bonus.
Wild card team's going to be kind of tougher, but I think the Colts win this division. Obviously, all the talk was the cap space this offseason. They didn't do a ton with it. Signed David Funchess to that weird $13 million one-year deal. Justin Houston was the only pass rusher of notice they added. But again, another team second to last in the NFL in adjusted games lost. So very injured last year. Despite all their success, I'm a little worried about the Luck calf, if I'm being honest. But you
How
also,
can you not be? He's not playing.
Yeah, it's very worrisome. I'm very worried about this meeting.
They dropped down my. Yeah, I mean, this is a high risk, high reward potentially. You know, well, there's no. I mean, we're not doing odds or anything, so you don't really benefit from. But I'm so worried about it.
Yeah, all right. So I'm extremely worried about that. Obviously, this all really hinges on Luck. He looked like the league MVP if it weren't for Patrick Mahomes last year with what he did. You and I both like Paris Campbell, who they added. On the defensive side, Rocky Sin is the draft pick for them out of Temple. I think is going to be a pretty good guy to help shore up that secondary. The real interesting part, and selfishly for me, I took them because I think they have the best offensive line in football. And it's super interesting because they fired their offensive line coach after giving up a league low in sacks last year. I actually think this group could get better. I actually think that's possible. So, and this is the way too inside offensive note for them, but the guy they hired, I think his name's Chris Strausser, was recommended by Howard Mudd. Howard Mudd, who was the offensive line coach during essentially the entire Peyton Manning Colts era. That whole team, so all the Jeff Saturday lines you think of, Howard Mudd's now there as like an offensive analyst advisor. It's a little more of an overarching role, but essentially Reich proud him out of retirement with this idea that he could come and coach this super talented group. And there was talk of, you know, guys feeling like maybe their technique slipped because DeGuglielmo, who had been their O-line coach, was the O-line coach in New England that year in 15 where Tom Brady got brutalized and they essentially begged Dante Scarnecchia to come out of retirement. So he was a holdover from some of those hires that happened with the whole Josh McDaniels snafu. And so I just think it's really interesting, this idea that their strength could get stronger.
Howard Mudd. Coach the Seahawks line for a bit. I know that because I have always thought to myself, Howard Mudd definitely can't coach any position other than offensive line with that name. It's just not happening. I love the line. You know, I have a lot of the Luck thing is just killing me, man. I'd be freaking out about it. And then the defense, there's a lot of question marks. You know, the secondary, they draft Rakuten, Marvell Tell, also incredible name. And I think they did re-sign Pierre Desir, who had sort of a career best season, veteran DB, but largely, I don't know. I'm not very enthusiastic about that secondary. And then I think a lot of people thought they were going to, I mean, they rolled over a ton of cap space. So a lot of people thought they would go a little bit bigger, perhaps. And Houston was a really nice signing for, I think, the value they got for him. And there's definitely some upside there. But, yeah, you know, it's not definitely not one of the better defenses in the NFL. I'll just say that. Okay, well, you took the Colts, so you made this pretty easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Did you? Cause now you're in my head. I was gonna take what I thought was an obvious team next. No, I'll take the Saints here. So we're at six, I think. Yeah.
Yep.
That feels right, right? We're at six. Okay. So yeah, I'll go ahead and take the Saints here. I think they are a slight, I have them in the Bears as like the NFC powerhouses that I kind of worry about a little bit, regression wise, but I think the roster's too good. And I'm not horribly concerned by what we saw from Breeze at the end of the season. By the way, Breeze, second best player in the NFL, according to the NFL 100. Dude, that was odd. I think given what they ask out of him in that offense now, I don't think it's the arm strength thing is like horribly concerning, right? And what I'm referring to is his splits at the end of the season were significantly worse. But I just think, again, the lines are both, you know, that offensive line is one of the better lines in football. Not much change there. Schedule isn't too, you know, horribly difficult. So, yeah, just from a roster perspective, Mike, it's hard to argue with them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was going to be the team next on my list. I was sitting here knowing when you were deliberating who it was, and I'm with you, and going to be interesting. Jared Cook they bring over, who is essentially the Raiders' only source of offense, plays one of the more important positions in the Sean Payton, Drew Brees offense, so excited to see the touches and the looks he's going to get in that.
Oh, he's going to rip it up, yeah. Again, I thought they might take a pass catcher in the draft, right? And you know, you're going to want to see more out of Marcus Davenport, I think, this season, come back healthy.
Well, especially because they're going to be dealing with Sheldon Rankin still coming back off his injury.
That's my concern. They added, what's his name, the Patriots guy, right, on the D-line. Malcolm.
Is it Malcolm Brown, the kid from Texas?
Yeah, he's on the Saints now. It's this time of year. You know, it's confusing because there's like 300 Malcolm Browns in the... Yeah, he is on the Saints. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
In the NFL now. But, okay.
One to watch right there, by the way, Max Unger, their center retired. New kid, Eric McCoy, rookie from Texas A&M, probably going to be in there. You mentioned the importance. A little less so with a quarterback like Drew Brees, but I digress.
They also signed Nick Easton from the Vikings, but I think you're probably going to want McCoy winning that job. Who you got next? There was a team that did. I want to see if you take the team that I was wavering between them and the Saints.
Yeah. See, now I'm wavering between who I believe they are and another team, and this is getting really problematic, but no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the Chargers.
That's who I was going to take.
Yep.
You're good.
Yeah. No, I've been on this podcast, I think, second only to Dominique, so I think we're starting to kind of understand tendencies here as we scout.
A little brain meld here. I mean, I think it's entirely possible that the Chargers win the AFC West.
Oh, yeah.
Start there.
I think that's entirely possible. I mean, I don't know. There's a ton to like about this team, obviously, offensively, even with the Melvin Gordon situation right now and not knowing exactly how that's going to work out for them.
Right.
Like, I mean, you've got, you know, I'm not going to say Austin Eckler or Justin Jackson are perfect replacements, but I think we all kind of know the conversation around running backs, and I still kind of go to bat for the Warrior elite, but Melvin Gordon is not Saquon Barkley, and he is not Ezekiel Elliott.
Right, and if the Chargers offense is different. Rivers' splits were a little bit concerning as well. Not horribly so, but he definitely wasn't as good down the stretch. I think my bigger concern with this team, and this is why I moved them down. That was seven, right?
Yep.
Is the offensive line, which is so clearly the weakness of this team. And with Russell Okung battling a pulmonary embolism, that tackle position is rough, man. I mean, you got Sam Tevy on the right side. They took a third round pick, but yeah, it's just a,
they're the West Coast Steelers secondary, like a position that has been such a weakness known for so long that they try and fail to address at every turn. It seems like, because the Chargers
and the secondary is awesome.
Derwin James is going to be a defensive player of the year before it's all said and done. Like, that guy is such a freak show.
We did that NFL pick 10 players. Do you see that where you would build around? And I think he made the consensus team, but he was no doubter on my team. Stanzik texted me, only 25 teams to go. We got through seven, Stanzik.
Yeah, we're crushing it right now.
All right, we'll keep rolling. I got a wild one for my next pick.
You know what? I'm very interested in this one because I think I know who it is.
Do you? Okay, so we're on eight, and I think the top seven, I think most people will agree with the teams we put there.
For sure.
I think there's a few on the fringes. Now we're getting into, like, you pick your poison territory. And I'm going with the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Didn't think I was going to go there.
No.
Did you think I was going to go Browns?
Honestly, I thought you were going to go a different NFC North team.
Oh.
I thought you were going to go Vikings.
Oh, boy. They are a little higher in mind than I think some of the... whatever. I'm not giving that away because you might take them next. But Yeah, you know, I think this defense is going to be significantly better than it was last year. And it's for as much hand-wringing as there was about Aaron Rodgers and him, you know, ignoring coaches and all that stuff, the offense was actually good by, you know, advance. I think they were in the top 10 in DVOA off the top of my head. So I'm not worried about that offense. I don't think that it'll be worse. I don't think we're going to see any, I don't know. I think I'm kind of excited to see what he puts together with LaFleur. I know he didn't do a lot in Tennessee, yada, yada, but I just, this is kind of for me a bet on the defense and some of the additions they made on that side of the ball.
No, absolutely. I remember you were super high on a lot of those. It's the first time we've really seen them address that in a meaningful way in the offseason or anything in the offseason the last couple of years in general. So
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Who you got?
All right. You know what? I said I thought who you were going against, and I'm still going to pick a different team. I'm going to go the Bears here.
Okay.
I'm going to go the
Bears.
They're
way down my list.
Yeah. I, you know what? I get it.
Not way down, but they're a few down.
You know what? I get it. It's a big bet on Mitchell Trubisky, obviously. You got Allen Robinson there. You know, I think it's so interesting. They obviously let Jordan Howard walk. David Montgomery from Iowa State is getting rave reviews in their training camp so far. The running back spot there that we know Matt Nagy likes to have fun with, but I think this defense, we talked about it on Golic and Wingo the other day, but teams that lead the league in turnovers and takeaways each year tend to regress by about just over 11 takeaways the next season.
Yeah.
And even with that, the Bears could still have the best defense in football. And I get it. You won't give as many opportunities to Mitch, but that offense, I think, is capable of stepping up at this point. But I know it's all a gamble on him, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears, I think success this season depends so much more on Mitch Trubisky than it did last year. And we've discussed the many reasons why, you might see a little bit of defensive regression. It's still an extraordinarily talented defense, but, for all the reasons you described, because of the coaching, because of the injury luck, a couple of losses in the secondary. I mean, it's still a ridiculous defense, but you just can't see this team, I think, leaning on them quite as hard as last year. They do have the fifth hardest schedule in the NFL as well. So, and I think the other two teams in the division that we'll talk about, you know, the Packers and the Vikings, will give them a bit of a harder competition this year. So I guess, yeah, you're right. It's all about Trubisky for me. All right. I'm going to go crazy.
Oh boy.
We're at 10, right?
Yep. We're at 10.
Okay. So, I'm going to go with the Browns here.
Ooh, I just heard.
Although I do not, there's too much coming out. I can't like Freddie, just chill with the, you know, you saw the thing about Bob Wiley, the offensive line coach saying that, Ken Zampezi was responsible for the offensive success. Somehow that creativity don't manifest itself in Cincinnati in the AAF, but I digress.
AAF shade. Let's go.
Yeah,
get
well,
you the podcast that
really
does more.
Not really. His fault, but Freddie clap back a little. But, you know, I just think as much as people talk about Odell and Baker and just saw a glorious clip of them too, I just think this front seven is ridiculous now. Maybe not the front seven, but the defensive line, you know, with the addition of Olivier Vernon and Sheldon Richardson, a defensive line that already has Myles Garrett and Larry Ogunjobi. The secondary was tremendous last year, and I imagine they're going to get even better. Everything you're hearing out of camp on Greedy Williams is just tantalizing. So, yeah, again, it's all about the two concerns I have about this team are the offensive line, which I think people are underrating, and then putting it all together and coaching. But I just think that this is the, if you want to, you know, roll the dice on a extremely talented roster, these are going to be your guys.
Yep, absolutely. I'm with you on the offensive line. That's something that's probably gone under-talked about. Kevin Zeitler was a guy that they traded away in that deal with the Giants that I believe was part of bringing Odell over or Olivier. I think it was Odell, right? Either way,
yeah.
Zeitler went east, and that group got a little bit weaker that was already at best. So
I'm
with you. Wow, all right. You're buying the Browns hype early. I love it.
10. I feel like in this 10 to 15 range, it's really, you know, you can just kind of it's you can take risks. So who do you got next?
Speaking of that, I'm going to go the team I mentioned. I'm going to take the Vikings here. 11 feels like the spot.
Really?
I just think, so you saw the tweets the other day. I know it was kind of making the rounds, but Daniel Jeremiah, who works over at the NFL, Met, saying that as he's gone on his training camp tour, 12 personnel has been really sexy and high on people's lists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think drafting Irv Smith Jr. out of Alabama, we talked about a tight end rich draft. He probably got lost in the shuffle amongst those Iowa tight ends as a guy who did a ton of different stuff. And that's kind of how they're using him. He's sort of that H tight end in their offense. And they re-signed Kyle Rudolph, their veteran there, to a deal, more of a traditional guy. So you've got a great 12 group. You add Garrett Bradbury at center there, who, you know, might play guard to start, however it works out. Your offensive line got a lot better on the interior because of him. And then they're all raving about Dalvin Cook in camp. Like, he's drawing some strong comparisons right now, now that he's been healthy. And so with that and a defense that I think got written off a little bit too early last year, I think this could be a really good team.
Totally agree on the defense, by the way, because they were a totally different unit in the second half of the season. And I think in the first half, I was like, what happened to this Vikings defense? And, well, you know, not having Everson Griffin and some, I guess there was just some bad luck, and I think they turned it around completely. The 12 thing's a really interesting point, right? Because that's something we've seen the Eagles do a lot of, and it makes a lot of sense because the way offensive trends work in the NFL, okay, you had all these teams starting to run 11, using more three wide receivers, so you had to get guys in nickel out, you had smaller defensive backs on the field, so this would naturally be a counter to that. The issue, I think, and by the way, you're sort of also, you've got defenses now who are saying, okay, are you going to run the ball? Are you going to run it on later downs? And I think you might see more offenses, I think, respond to that by saying, yeah, sure, we got a tight end. He can block, he can catch, whatever. The problem is not every team in the NFL has two tight ends, I think. So the Vikings are an interesting one, to your point, that they drafted a guy and then they brought back Rudolph. I think that will help. So yeah, I do like them. I think with me, Warren Sharp and I talked about this last week, Mike. I'm just sort of curious to see whether this talk of offensive creativity actually manifests itself on the field, right? New coordinator, and Stefanski saying a lot of things we like to hear about running more play action and not going as old school perhaps as Mike Zimmer would like, but you know, we gotta see that play out.
The Kubiak influence there will be interesting too. Yes. Obviously, someone who's gonna be around that who's used to a ton of good boot action.
A perfect match for the skill set of many of the players they have on that roster. 12. I'm gonna take the Pittsburgh Steelers here. Producer Dan just texted me. We are at 40 minutes, so I am really sorry, but we're gonna try to move a little bit quicker. But you know what? It's August. Football's here. People are excited. You can split this into two podcasts for your own personal listening. We're not going to actually do that work. I'm gonna take the Steelers. They're my handcuff to the Browns. I think there's, you know, reason to believe the offense will not perform significantly worse.
I'd agree.
I think there'd be, yeah. Liked the Devin Bush signing, still concerns about that secondary, but obviously they addressed their biggest area of need on that side of the ball.
For sure. Devin Bush is, I think, a huge difference maker. We've seen what that team looks like when it has an athletic difference maker in the middle of the field, so totally with you.
Okay. Who you got next?
Speaking of the athletic difference makers in the middle, I think I'm going to reach for the Cowboys here. I think I'm going to go for the Cowboys here. You've got so much youth and athleticism on the defensive side. You re-signed DeMarcus Lawrence. Offensively, I don't know, and it is not sexy. Kellen Moore is one of the most interesting people in the NFL this season. What he is going to do with that Cowboys offense is going to factor so much into, you know, we've got the Zeke holdout going on right now. Sources told Josina Anderson, as of the recording of this podcast, that Zeke will not play in 2019 without a new contract. All the posturing that goes on, but we talk about what Zeke's meant to this offense. What he means going forward is really entirely dependent on what kind of offense we're going to see from Kellen Moore.
That's such a great point, because I think there's a lot of excitement about Moore, and some of it, I think, is because Dan Orlovsky, our friend on this podcast, talked about, you know, his creativity and his intelligence and some of the sort of modern concepts we might see from him, you know, stuff from Boise State. Great. Love that. But if they don't know if Zeke's going to be there, like, as much as we think running backs are overrated, perhaps, by teams, what's not overrated is certainty. Is knowing what your offense is actually going to look like. Like, I, for one, still believe they're going to get a deal done with Zeke, and I do believe this is mostly posturing.
For sure.
But if Kellen Moore, let's say he plans an entire offense and then Zeke doesn't come, right? That's very challenging for a first-time offensive coordinator, even as much as I think, you know, you're able to sort of bring in different running backs and get similar production. But that, again, is entirely contingent on the type of offense you call. So I guess it concerns me. They do have an easy schedule. They did get lucky last year, not insofar as they won a lot of really close games, which is something we tend to see regress. But I am worried about it, and there are some holes, you know, on defense, and we'll see, I guess. But I think this is about the right spot to put them.
The thing that scares me more than anything is Zach Martin's aggravated disc right now. Between that and the Tyron Smith bodily breakdown that we kind of see progressing more and more each year, this offensive line is far from 2016, but I think could still be very good if health holds.
Yeah. An offensive line that, you know, again, when we go back to the running back conversation, is far more responsible for Dak's performance than anything else on the team. Pay offensive linemen. Okay, 14. I'm a 14. I'm going to take the Carolina Panthers, a team that I am higher on, I think, than a lot of people. I don't know about you.
They were a little further down on my list, but this feels like exactly what you're talking about with this area. A lot of volatility. We know about Cam's health, but this defense also kind of underperformed last year.
A defense that I think... Okay, so I used the word ridiculous front seven to describe the Browns, then I walked it back thinking about the linebackers. This is a ridiculous front seven. Just, you know, absolutely absurd. And I think also a front seven that has the potential to do some creative things as well. You know, they are transitioning to a 3-4, which I had sort of mixed feelings about. Just because of the personnel and how good Kaywon Short's been in the 4-3. But I think that we're going to see some different looks from them, and I think that they have the talent to execute them. On the other side of the ball, Cam Newton was tremendous last year before getting hurt, and they actually upgraded their offensive line. They had an offensive line that was surprisingly good last year. I think a lot better. People like Taylor Moten was much better than anyone could have expected. And, you know, you got Darrell Williams coming back. They drafted Greg Little in the second round. They signed Matt Paradis at center. So I just think this is a team that got better and already probably underperformed relative to their talent level.
No, absolutely. They're going to be very exciting to watch. Christian McCaffrey is going to be a guy who could flirt with some serious splits as far as receiving yards and rushing yards this season.
Okay. Who you got at 15?
All right.
You made it.
15. We are chugging along here. I'm going to go. This feels like the perfect spot. I'm going to go Jacksonville.
Wow.
Give me the Jags, and I get it. I've heard all this talk about how their receiving core is super underwhelming, and we still said if they got something just better than what Blake Bortles was providing them, look what this team could have been. It's going to be offensively a lot different. You're going to marry up the things that Nick Foles did well, obviously the same coordinator he worked with in his time in Philadelphia. I just think that coupled with a defense that is loaded with dogs, this is... And you know, should be noted, Telvin Smith sitting out that year obviously affects what they're getting in the middle, but Miles Jack still making candles for the whole gang in the middle of that defense. I just think this group got written off because of what happened last year. I think this is a playoff team this year.
Don't love the skill players. Do like the offensive line relative to last year, just with guys coming back from injury. Little bit of news on that front. Unique Ngakoue is going, he did report, right? And he said he's not getting a long-term deal, which is crazy to me that Jacksonville's not giving him a long-term deal. I don't understand that at all. But you're right. The defense is very good. And, yeah, I mean, they're a team, I think a popular bet to get better this year. Obviously, a lot of that is just Foles. So it's not unreasonable. All right. What wasn't reasonable is how much time we spent on the first five teams, but we're finally at the midpoint, and that means it's time for mailbag.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
We're going to blaze through these, Mike, and they're not very serious. DMarty T Party asks, chicken nuggets or chicken strips? Ooh. I used to love chicken nuggets as a kid. I used to get the McDonald's 20. Do you ever get that?
Oh, of course. Come on, I mean, I was fat for a long time.
It's kind of a rhetorical question. Sweet and sour or barbecue?
Barbecue.
Oh, see, that's where we differ. I love the sweet and sour sauce at McDonald's. But I'll go with tenders. I mean, just because I'm an adult and, you know, they're more, like, there are very few situations where you can even get nuggets as an adult.
Fact. Me, an intellectual, eating chicken strips.
Christo Holy Moses asks for the best place to eat in Seattle. So I'm way behind on like the culinary scene in Seattle. I really like that place in Ballard, Walrus and the Carpenter. I'll throw that out there, but I'm sure there's much trendier, cooler places these days. Also,
that
you can't
sounds
go wrong with
like
Dick.
The trendiest place on earth.
When did all like good restaurants start doing two nouns? You know, like fork and spatula, or you know,
the butcher and the bear,
pistol and rifle. That's not a good one. Don't do that. pine cone and nut. That's not a good one either.
Maybe this is a sign that you and I probably won't be going into the restaurant business anytime soon.
I like the two animals as a concept, right? Like, you know, anteater and hedgehog. Also a really bad name for a restaurant. Russ 04010, ooh, this is a great one, asks for the best name for a fictional power hitter. And he offers up me to choose between Max Clobbers and Scotty Mash. Definitely Max Clobbers, but also if we want to think of our own.
Ooh. Ooh. I mean,
Taters McGee. That's just it.
You know what? It's like that hits home, especially Jason Fitz, who works on Golic and Wingo with us now, has really been driving home Taters in his SportsCenter updates as his home run call of choice. I'm going to stick with mine and go Bobby Dingers.
Bobby Dingers, yeah.
Love
right.
me a good dinger.
I'm awake. I'm wide awake. 321 asks, if Lenny could switch places with any human for a day, who would it be? Okay. So Lenny's priorities, you know, I was just talking to my husband about this. Like, what would happen if we just put out a bunch of food? Like, would Lenny eat it all or would he eat until he was full? Because cats can self-regulate their appetites, but I don't know if Lenny, I don't think he can. I think he would eat, throw up and then eat again and maybe eat his throw up as well. So, if he was switching places with a human, he would want to choose someone who had a massive appetite and also no self-control and access to a lot of food.
This feels like a personal attack.
I'm not talking, maybe like Kobayashi or something, the hot dog dude.
Yeah, I was going to say competitive eater seemed like that or me.
Last question. Afghan Ambler Secretary asks, if you get hired as a GM in 10 years, what job would you give to Lenny? Ooh. Definitely could not coach or scout. Although,
I don't know. I feel like he's got a real nose for talent.
I'd love to put him in like the interview room because honestly, if somebody's not good with my dog,
Mina, that would be great for the combine interviews.
That's a really good, like as a test.
Yeah.
Add that to the combine in general?
Ooh, a dog portion where you just walk in a room and it's all right. If they don't get along with my dog, it's like a significant other. They're gone.
This is like it reminds me of my idea for a TV show, like The Bachelor, but it's a dog and they're choosing their family that will adopt them. And so they go on four hometown dates with four different families. And then at the very end, you put them in a field and you line up the four families on each four corners and you see who the dog runs to.
If I'm one of the families the dog doesn't choose, like if a dog doesn't look at me in public or walks away when I approach to pet, I am distraught for the rest of the day. The amount of crying I would do in that field. Good Lord.
Am I up next? Do I have the 16th pick?
Yes, you do. Pick 16. Mina Kimes getting us started with the back half.
All right.
Or ending the
I got to go Seahawks
half.
Here. Yeah, I got to go Seattle here. Yeah. I mean, I had them a little bit earlier, and then my draft got derailed. But here's my realistic homer take on the Seahawks. I actually think the offense is going to be really good. I think it's the defense that you've got to worry about with this team. I think the line is finally sort of solidified. Like, you can finally expect, hopefully, average play from this offensive line, which is great. I'm not worried about losing Doug Baldwin hurts, but he was in and out a lot last season. I'm buying a lot of the DK hype, man, and they got Will Disley, tight end, back. I think the running group is really solidified. Wilson's great. I'm not worried about that group. It's the absence of a pass rush that's really the killer on this team.
Man, when's the last time you said that about a Seahawks defense?
I know.
My God.
So crazy. They are saying Ziggy Ansah should be ready week one, which is against the Bengals, so it's a soft open. So we'll get to that team at some point.
We won't have all the main dishes ready, but just come on in, find your way, make yourself
just
home.
Put something on the plate. Okay, who do you got at 16?
I'm going with the Falcons.
Yeah, they're in my next kind of cluster.
Yeah. Figure this one, I mean, obviously this offseason, big for them defensively. Re-signed Grady Jarrett to that big deal on the defensive line, looking for some production there. They've really struggled. You know, Vic Beasley never really panned out pass rushing-wise. Waiting to see on Tack McKinley, Deion Jones at linebacker, get back Keanu Neal healthy in that secondary. So all these things lining up, that's another defense that if it claws its way out of the cellar, that offense. I mean, Matt Ryan almost threw for 5,000 yards. I know you're very pro-Matt Ryan, so...
Yeah, I'm no concerns about this offense. Best wide receiver group in the NFL, arguably. You know, changes at play caller and bring back some oldies for that, but I'm not worried. I just think it's whether these guys can come back from injury, whether they can get enough of a pass rush. That's my question with them. At 17, I'm taking the Baltimore Ravens. And I'm a very AFC North heavy. I think I have, yeah, I have the Browns, the Ravens, so I've really hedged my bets on the AFC North. I'm just really excited to watch what this Ravens team looks like, man. Everything coming out of camp on what they're doing on offense is just interesting and exciting. And because it's not like that, oh, we're just going to run the ball, play old school football. You got Harbaugh saying, we're going to do things the NFL has never seen before, which is, you know, obviously a little bit dramatic. But that excites me more. Obviously, Greg Roman, we know, has done cool things in the past with mobile quarterbacks and Tyrod and Cap. And then I think this is the best secondary in the NFL.
Wow. All right. And you know what? I'd agree. The defense top to bottom is going to be vicious. Obviously, I feel every time I think about the Ravens defense, I say in my John Gruden voice, daggone Judon.
Well, they really need him to step up because, you know, the loss of the Smiths, that pass rushing production is really gone. So he's going to be very key. I do think that the secondary helps a lot. So Bruce Jan informed me that was actually pick 18. So with 19, Team Golic Jr. takes?
The Houston Texans.
That's who I had next, yeah.
This is one, like, the offensive skill firepower is just too much to ignore. I don't think they did enough to address the offensive line woes. You've got Tyus Howard from Alabama A&T or something, and Max Sharping that I think at this point are both going to start, or at the very least are... in the conversation.
Yikes.
I think they're projects. I don't think Houston's shown any ability to develop projects on the offensive line. Defensively, we obviously know the deal over there. It's driven by the same cast of characters it's been, which is a very good, albeit cast of characters that is aging. The Clowney question kind of looms large over them. What's going to end up happening with him? So that'll factor in. But Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins, and what they've got there in Deshaun Watson, that's worth enough in and of itself.
Second hardest schedule, which hurt them in my rankings. Let me ask you this question. If the Texans GM by committee, I know, if they traded for Trent Williams, would you move them up?
Absolutely. Oh my God. Wow. You saying that actually just like elicited a physical response from my body. I'm salivating right now. Trent, it's obviously that whole mess in Washington that we'll get to whenever they come up in this. But, yeah, that would change a lot. Having anything that resembles adequate protection for Deshaun Watson would be huge for this team.
At number 20, I am taking – this feels like a perfect spot for the Tennessee Titans.
Ooh, tighten up.
The team that inexplicably finishes with 9 wins, and no one knows how it happened. you know, we've been through it with the Titans. We have no idea what we're going to get out of Marcus Mariota because of the health concerns, obviously. It's funny, I put them at 20, and they finished 22nd in offense and 19th in defense, efficiency-wise, last year. So it feels pretty accurate. I do think they improved a lot of pieces around Mariota, although the Taylor Lewan suspension, was that 4 games or more?
4 games.
4 games. Okay, that hurts. An offense that they did add Roger Saffold on that side, right, at left guard, so that should help. But, you know, that's still obviously with Mariota and some of the issues he's had and some of that is self-imposed. That's a problem. But I did like adding Humphreys and Brown on that side of the ball. And then on the other side, you know, I think the secondary has the potential to be very good. I like the linebacker group a lot. Jayon Brown, Woodyard, Landry, Wake. That's nice. Not super special up front, though. And, you know, they did spend that first-round draft pick on Jeffrey Simmons, who's going to have a redshirt year. But I still think it's going to be a better-than-average defense.
Yep, absolutely. They have gone in with the identity of their coach and drafted very high at outside linebackers since Vrabel showed up there. So nothing shocking there. But
well,
yeah,
my coaches
right.
do that.
Yeah. This quarterback room, it's like good because it's deep, but they're the same quarterback. Like a guy that's pretty good
yeah.
but hurt a ton.
What's your over-under on Tannehill taking the job?
Yeah, either by injury or by performance, I could see Tannehill starting five games this year.
Totally. Okay, who you got at 21?
21, I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers.
They're 22 for me, so.
Yeah, I think and Bill Barnwell wrote a great piece on five teams that look like they are primed to have bounce-back seasons in 2019. San Fran, super high on the list. Obviously, you could hard stop at just Jimmy Garoppolo. But this team
right.
also had seven takeaways, on defense last year. They had two interceptions all season.
That is so crazy. How have people like not talked about that more? I could not believe that when I saw that in Bill's article.
You keep like looking at the stat sheet and going online and making sure I'm not reading it wrong or it's not a typo. So just off that, you know, they draft Nick Bosa, you know, who a lot of people were expecting to come in and just be a carbon copy of Joey, but you do that. The D Ford ad also on the edge for them. So it just, I mean, by existing in 2019, they should have more turnovers for an offense that's going to get the quarterback we all expect to run Shanahan stuff better.
Love this defensive line. I think they have the potential to just destroy teams. Do not love what's happening behind it. I think with Jason Verrett, you get a lot of upside, right? Because he's played at a Pro Bowl level and has been just sort of racked by injuries, and this is sort of a bet by them, and it's a very low-risk bet given how little they're paying him. But that secondary is going to depend a lot on those pass rushers, you know, making life easier for them. But I do think that defense is going to look a lot better. I also don't love the pass catchers outside of Kittle and Pettis on this offense. But
yeah, what happened to Marquise Goodwin, by the way?
Every time I laugh, it's because Dan's texting how long this podcast is going. He's still there. He's still there. He's still fast.
Oh, yeah.
He's old, you know. Okay, I'm going to take the Lions next. So at 22. Is that in the neighborhood of where you've got them?
Yeah, they were the next team down on my list with San Fran and Baltimore gone. So Detroit, this is their spot for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I did the NFC North with Adam Schefter, and we both had them as sort of being the odd team out in this group. Although Football Outsiders is way more optimistic on them than I am. I think they have them like in the top 12 or something. So, you know, I we'll see what the Daryl Bevel effect yields. Really love Kerryon Johnson, and obviously think he's going to get the rock a lot more in this offense. Some changes on the offensive line on the inside could help as well. Adding Flowers was their big pickup on the defensive line that I actually think is really good. You know, with Snack Harrison made a massive difference in the run defense last year, but Deshaun Hand also I think has the potential to be a real difference maker there.
Who did they just sign, by the way? Who was the other D-line signing they just had?
Oh, right. Mike Daniels,
yeah,
too.
Huge,
jeez,
huge
D-line. That was the other, right, yeah.
Yeah, huge interior D-line signing for them.
So, yay. It feels very Patricia-like.
Extremely. All right, with the next pick and the number I have now lost track of, I am going to... Oh, boy, man, we are really getting into dicey territory now. I'm just going to say I'm going to go with Washington. Oh, God.
Really?
Oh, God.
That's not where I'd go.
Yeah, no, you know what? It's just, it's one of those things where we're at that time of year where I am getting and buying into the yearly round of healthy Jordan Reed hype. Between that, like, you know, I know Colt McCoy's starting right now. I think we're going to end up seeing Dwayne Haskins pretty early. He's got Terry McLaurin there, who he's used to from Ohio State. If Jordan Reed stays healthy, it's could become one of those situations that's the refrain. This could be the year. The Trent Williams stuff scares me, but they've still got some other solid guys on that offensive line, even without a ton of depth. And you have the entire SEC West playing D-line for you. Add Montez Sweat to Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen there. At some point, that's got to start to buy you something, and I think some point is this year.
So the Redskins released their first unofficial depth chart. You know who the number one quarterback is right now?
Is it Colt?
It's Colt McCoy.
Oh, man. Jay Gruden's pumped.
I just can't. It's funny that you mentioned those Bama guys on that line, because you look at it and you're like, yeah, you know, it looks like a good defensive line, but they were weirdly terrible against the run last season. So I don't know. I don't like the secondary at all. There's just so much uncertainty there. I know they're really high on some of the young guys, but and obviously adding Collins helps, but outside of him and Norman, it's just a lot of question marks for me in this secondary as well.
Who are you picking around this range? Because I'm starting to look down and I'm starting to see a lot of ugly stuff.
Okay. Yeah. And look, but by the way, with Washington, I am now, we'll see what happens with Williams, but just to, you know, I did like the Haskins pick and where they got him. And now I think they really do not want to play that man.
Yep.
I got the Jets.
Damn it.
Second easiest schedule in the NFL behind New England. Everybody knows I'm Sam Hive. And by the way, Ryan Khalil coming out of retirement for one last job to play center for the New York Jets. Look, the offensive line's going to be better. The play calling is going to be better. They've got Le'Veon Bell. I expressed some concerns on the podcast that they were going to have Sam dinking, dunking. That Gase, who's done this in the past, my frustration, is going to have Sam dinking and dunking with the occasional deep pass to Robbie Anderson. And I would not enjoy seeing that, because I think Sam Darnold is a better quarterback than that. But this is one of those teams where, you know, they made a lot of very Jetsian, possibly ill-advised signings, but they had a ton of cap space and a rookie quarterback, so I don't hate any of it.
Quinnen Williams, Defensive Rookie of the Year.
The best human, also. What a star that
guy. We must protect
is.
Him.
Love that D-line, by the way. I can talk myself into the Jets sneaking into the playoffs easily.
All right, well, you stole the pick that I really wanted in this spot, and so now I've got to do a thing I really don't want to do and pick the Denver Broncos.
Really?
Yeah. I'm just...
Not where I've got teams ahead of them, so... Okay.
Yeah, listen, it's all looking ugly. I'm making a lot of decisions against the best wishes in my draft chart, but I keep looking down at here and seeing what lies in wait. And I figure Von Miller in that defense, him and Bradley Chubb are still worth a lot as bookends on that side of the ball.
Sure.
I think that is maybe still one of the elite pass rushing groups. Derek Wolfe on the interior for that. Offensively, it's going to get a little interesting. We obviously know the Flacco thing, what Vic Fangio is going to have going on the side of the ball that is not his specialty, but I just, again, where we're getting down to right now, I'm counting on that defense being strong enough to at least be better than some of the other teams we've got left.
I'm probably underrating this Broncos defense with Fangio. As I look at the depth chart, it's pretty nice. For all the reasons you described. And yes, I imagine too, I just what Fangio will do also with the secondary, you know, I think it's a little bit different from some of his past defenses, because you could say the weakness is probably the linebacker, the inside linebacker group, which Fangio always has like this, like an elite, you know, or elite, or I guess sort of a quarterback of the defense. And they're kind of missing that here, but the pass rush is just ridiculous, and I think the pass defense is going to be really good as well. But yeah, I don't like this. I don't like the offense. I'm excited about this next team. I'm going to take the Bills here.
Ooh.
Yeah. Another defense. I just talked about them. Another defense that I love. Underrated defense. Ridiculous secondary. Another coach who's kind of building the team in his own image, and Sean McDermott, who I think is very good. You know, this is a team where the quarterback can be potentially a limiting factor. People got mad last week when I talked about Cam Newton being a model for them. It's not a comp, it's a model for Josh Allen, but I stand by that. I think I like what they're doing around him. Mitch Morse getting a concussion is obviously not good for Mitch Morse or for the team, because that's something that you want to see him in there early, and he does have a history. But aside from that, I think if he can come back and be healthy, I think we should continue to see some improvement from Josh Allen.
I know that was hard for you to do, Mina, as someone who was, I won't say down on, but just critical of Josh Allen as a draft
critical
pick.
Critical
of so.
The pick.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I said critical of the pick.
It's the pick. It's the pick.
Not the player.
All right, who you got next?
Man, I guess I'm taking the Bengals. I guess that's going to happen.
I mean, that's where we are.
Yeah, that's where we are. You know, Zach Taylor taking over, like, obviously, A.J. Green being out for this extended period of time to start the season is a huge blow to all this. they re-signed Tyler Boyd, and they're going to expect a lot from him as they try and figure out the rest of what they have. Joe Mixon will be the feature guy there from now. I think we're going to start to fade Giovanni Bernard. I know fantasy owners should be concerned about that. But, yeah, I think just in general, I'm excited to see some change here. The Marvin Lewis era in Cincinnati is over, and a franchise I don't think cares all that much about winning at least showed a pulse.
So they're 31 on my my list. But, yeah. I'm just gonna do my next pick. You Bengals fans are mad. You know, there's definitely things to be interested and excited about. I mean, I feel like I want to do a pod at this point. Like, what do you watch for when your team's not good? Like, what are you paying attention to? Because I certainly went through that as a Seattle fan as well. And some of those early 2010, whatever type of years, recently, you know, you were looking at, draft picks and asking yourself, what do you want to see out of them? And it is a bummer with the Bengals losing Jonah right off the bat. It really stinks. And AJ, who I once thought was a Bleacher Report blogger, and that's a different story. But okay, I'm going to take, the Bucks here.
Yeah, that was the one I was flirting with.
Don't like the schedule. It's difficult. Do, like the offense, I think they're going to shred with Arians. I think they were unlucky in a lot of the metrics that are like not likely to happen again, I suppose, year to year in terms of just being really, really bad in the red zone. Another team like the Eagles that had really, really bad injury luck, a very young secondary. Sorry, 70 minutes. So I'll take the Bucks here.
I just love the constant look at the clock at this point. Like, it's a race against time to get in our points about these bad NFL teams at the bottom of this draft.
All right, who you got?
This is who
we're picks to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's just coin flips at this point. I'll go Oakland.
Okay.
I'll go Oakland. They've at least got a veteran quarterback. If Antonio Brown figures out what the hell's going on with the bottom of his feet. This is an offense between him and Josh Jacobs that at least have weapons. He who must not be named is coaching the O-line, so I'm kind of freaked out about that still, but brought Trent Brown over. Again, it's all a crapshoot now.
Still a really, really tough depth chart on defense.
And a really tough schedule.
Fourth hardest. Okay, so I'm going to take the Giants next, purely because they have the fourth easiest schedule in the NFL and because their offensive line is a lot better this year. It's like the best line that they've had in a while. You know, so they, as you mentioned earlier, when we talked about the Browns, they brought in Kevin Zeitler. I can't imagine Nate Solder will be worse than last year. I think he's more likely to be better. We'll see another year of development from Will Hernandez. And when Eli has protection, you know, he can play, I think, at this point at an average level. So I'll go, even though they lost like 300 wide receivers to injury, I'll go with the Giants here.
All right, well, Mina, since you started off the podcast with gifting me the number one overall pick as your guest, I am going to finish by allowing you to take a team that's near and dear to your heart. I am going to take the Arizona Cardinals, which will leave you with your beloved fish tank.
Love to see it. Although I'm worried Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to mess around and screw me here. But well, not screw me, because you don't, you know, actually, if you get a bad team, so you want these bad teams to do well, you want all the teams to do well. So I haven't thought through the system a lot, but you know what I mean. Yeah, Cardinals and the Dolphins are a fun coin flip.
Oh, wow, Mina. So I've just been alerted that now, after your selection of the Dolphins, which albeit was forced because I took the Cardinals, you now have the entire AFC East. Congratulations.
I wonder, there's probably some strategy to this, like, because I have most of the AFC North as well. You took the Bengals. Like, there's definitely... Yeah, because if a smarter person would have looked at my point system and thought through like some strategy in terms of, you know, trying to take a division, get all the possible winners in every division, but I am not that person. So let's get to the final segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Listen, if you've been listening to this podcast for this long,
what the hell's wrong with you?
You really like podcasts. So I want to just tell you about another one, because, hey, let's take up some more of your time. That's the Fantasy Football Focus Podcast with Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell. And it is back. The 06010 crew will be posting new episodes every weekday through the end of the 2019 season. Download and subscribe to the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Mike, this feels like a good place to start. My first question, coming off of, you know, some of those bad teams, which is, who do you think gets Tua next season?
Ooh, who do I think gets Tua next season? I think ultimately it's going to be the Dolphins.
Let me rephrase that. Who is the second most likely team to take Tua next season?
Yeah, I guess looking at all of this, if I'm looking at the teams that could potentially be awful and in the market for a quarterback, I could see the Bucs.
Ooh, because that brings up, though, I really think they're going to extend Jameis. I think he's going to shred and they're going to extend him. This feels like something that's
going
to happen.
Again, if I'm going outside the obvious Miami, the Bucs crater, Bruce Arians sees a guy that can definitely push the ball downfield in the way he likes and they'd be in range. I think they could be up there.
I wouldn't throw out Denver, too, as a crazy option at this point. Defense might be too good, but, you know, I'd have to look at the picks they have if they have the ammunition. The thing about the Dolphins is they have so many picks that even if they're not at the top, they've got the ammunition to get there. Question two, which Disney character do you relate to the most?
Ooh.
It's a company question.
Man, yeah, no, good, a solid company question here. You know what? I will say that coming off of seeing The Lion King in theaters now, check it out. God, it's making so much money. Our Disney stock looks great right now. I would go with I forget of the meerkat and the warthog, which one is Timon and which one is Pumbaa, admittedly.
I think Pumbaa's
the warthog. I would go with Pumbaa. He is large. He is jovial. He likes to sing, even though his voice is not perfect, a little pitchy at times, so I can relate to a lot of that. And he's weirdly emotional, which I also fall into that category. So, yeah, the more I think about it, I got a lot of really weird similarities to a cartoon warthog.
Are you and I Timon and Pumbaa?
Oh, wow. Oh, because, well, Mina, you always said if we were to ever have a show, we would actually be like Bran and Hodor from Game of Thrones, but this might be better.
This also feels less problematic.
Oh, 100%.
So maybe this is the better comp. Okay, get at us in the mentions if you have better suggestions. Question three. I've actually never asked you this. I'm very curious because you grew up in a sports family. So your allegiances have always been kind of complicated. It's not the normal, like, oh, I just, you know, was born here and I root for this team. Have you ever had an NFL team that you rooted for?
I grew up, and again, it's skewed because of family, but I grew up rooting for the Eagles. My dad spent the majority of his career there. I spent most of my life growing up in the Northeast and hating the teams that my friends were fans of. Most of them were either Giants or Patriots fans, and so I leaned into the Eagles thing. I was there for like the Brian Westbrook, Donovan McNabb's, Brian Dawkins years. So a lot of good runs when Andy Reid was taking them to NFC championships every year. So I was definitely there for the good years.
Interesting. So were you stoked when they won the Super Bowl?
You know what?
Is it kind of out of your system now?
It's one of those things where, and this is the, I don't really harbor a lot of ill will towards anything from the NFL at this point. Like I kind of, you know, got out of it what someone in my skill set tends to when all things are considered, but I just went through the process and everyone either cut or didn't sign me so they can kind of all go kiss my ass. Like that's I root for my friends at this point. I kind of gave up on that allegiance after going through the process.
Question four. What is your favorite part about the preseason?
My favorite part about the preseason is probably the first, I'm trying to think of what was exciting about it for me as a player versus now. Like, I really think, like, it's watching all the rookies adjust, right? Like, we mentioned at the beginning of this pod 2 days ago, Noah Fant going out there for the first time for Denver. On the other side, seeing some of the rookies for the Atlanta Falcons, especially in the offensive line. Like, getting our first look at guys, especially for me as someone who covers a lot of college football, and watching how they've made the transition to the pro game.
Well, I actually follow-up question, because let's not, you know, stop ourselves. Why not try to get that hour and a half mark here? What position do you think at this point, like, most quickly translates to the NFL?
I still think it's running. I think it's running back. Like,
at this point,
you've still got, because I think it's going to be interesting how it changes, right? The pipeline now that we're, you know, devaluing is the wrong word, just not as willing to highly pay. And guys tend to go where the opportunity is to get paid. And so I think you might see kids in that kind of skill area maybe look more towards the slot and try and say, if this is where football is going to live, let me be there. But you've still got a glut of talent there, and you can plug them into different spots and have backfields with multiple guys for very little inexpensive draft capital. Like, I think, and you can use them situationally. Not every guy has to come out and be great at everything.
That's the Jalen Hurd model, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Popular dynasty pick, I've noticed. All right, last question, as always, comes from Lenny. It's kind of long, so it's going to take me a second. Mike, I was on Wikipedia trying to change my mom's picture. She really doesn't like her picture. And if anyone else is listening who knows how to type, please change the picture, preferably to one with me. And I decided to go to your Wikipedia page. Something struck me about it. It says, under personal stuff, Golic was born with a severe peanut and food allergy that has a major impact on his life. Then later it says, Golic stated he does not have any allergies. So what is it? Why did you lie?
First off, Lenny, I want you to know that I would never lie to you. Ever. You mean too much to me. Second, yeah, this has been I truly don't have an answer for where this came from. I am in, and I want this PSA. If you've made it to the end of this podcast, please tweet out at anyone who will listen. Mike Gold Jr. is in no way, shape, or form allergic to anything peanut related.
Why does your Wikipedia page say that then?
I'm convinced.
It says Golic was born with a severe... Okay, change my picture, please. And also, somebody change this. Because it says you were born with a peanut. Severe peanut allergy. And that's had a major impact on your life.
I'm convinced that one of my friends did this to get back at me. Because I have this nasty habit of lying about things that are inconsequential. I once convinced my buddy's wife that my middle name was Randolph for 6 months for no reason. I once convinced the entire Notre Dame hockey team, as far as I'm aware of, for 4 years that my brother was adopted. And boy, did that piss my mom off. I did that just like flippantly, not thinking anyone would bite. And so I think all of my friends were so sick of me taking advantage of them because, listen, I'm very believable. Like, I'm an honest guy for the most part. I think this is a revenge plot from one of them. I'm not sure who yet, though.